mundo.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Gestalten Podcast, presented to you by Concept House Innovation Consultancy, your latest partner when it comes to process optimization, your design studio, skill and management training with our academy services, as well as our latest dynamic service approach. So go check it out on concepthouse-ic.com. And back to our main topic, which is this episode of the Gestalten Podcast. This week's guest is Joe Stenoid, who is the design director for Mazda in Europe, based in Frankfurt, or very close to Frankfurt. And I had the lovely pleasure to have about an hour's conversation with him about brand and strategic design. And of course, he told us a little bit more about how it is to work with Japan in an exchange, the importance of the studio here in Europe, and how they can make it work so that they really make a global product. So enjoy the conversation that I had with Joe. And as always, do not forget to follow us on social media. Leave us a 5-star rating if you listen to us on Apple iTunes or Apple Podcasts. And if you listen to us from any other channel and there is a rating system, give us the highest rating. Thanks a lot. And let's get cracking on with the conversation with Joe. Yo, welcome to the show, and I hope you're doing well, and thanks for taking the time to speaking with me.
Hi, Martin. Pleasure to talk to you, and yes, I'm doing well.
Very good, very good. Now, I've asked you about a very special topic today. We are talking about brand strategy and branding within the design department. And obviously, before you moved into your new role as design director for Mazda in Europe, you have worked very extensively with interior design as well as with brand design. So who better to talk to about this than you? And jumping straight right into this, my question to you would be, how would you personally define for the listeners that only, or like not only, but work in exterior, interior, color and trim, modeling, all those kind of things, what's brand design for you and why is it so important in this current kind of culture and moving forward into the future?
Well, I think through my experience, I learned that basically the brand is the bigger picture, and car design is part of building up the brand. But there's so many more aspects to the brand than just the design of the car. So when I designed an interior before, of course I would design it for a Mazda, so there was some kind of definition of what people would expect from a Mazda. But now we look also at all the other aspects, not just the car design, but also, you know, the way people perceive the brand through all the channels, basically. So it's the bigger picture for me.
It's the bigger picture. And how do you define that bigger picture? I mean, that's not just coming through sketching. This means you have to have a much wider understanding, not just from a creative perspective, but also from a business perspective and also an overall company perspective, I would imagine.
Well, I mean, I always imagine myself being a customer and seeing the brand. I mean, I know my brand inside out, but I know that, let's say, normal customers might not know it or only see my brand every now and then. So I need to make sure if I work on a brand that every person perceives us in the same or a similar way.
I mean, like, you know, there's so much praise for what Mazda have achieved over the past 5-10 years, I would say. And a lot has to do with the design language and appearance. But when I look into the brand, there was this massive development, not just from the product itself, but how it represents. So putting myself into your shoes, when, you know, like you start off with this new direction, new communication, new, you know, just new tasks on your day-to-day level. How does this affect you? I mean, like when you moved into this brand strategy a few years ago, what did you expect of yourself? Because that's obviously very difficult to be tangible. Like, yeah, do some brand strategy. It's not just about doing a grill. How did you make that tangible for yourself as a job, but also for your colleagues, for your superiors, as well as then for the clients in the end?
To me, it almost came naturally because I've always been looking at brands before, even as a car designer. But what I learned is that, you know, to communicate what you want towards internally to your managers or externally to a marketing department or agencies is the fact that you have to be very clear and very understandable what you want to achieve with the brand. And you also need to be very, in a sense, very ambitious and very structured and very consistent. And if you do that, which it doesn't matter what the brand is, the people will understand what you're aiming for and they will start following you.
Was that a particular challenge to push for something like that with a Japanese company? I mean, you know, Europeans, Asians, Americans, they tick very differently. So you as a European with a Japanese company, was there any particular hurdles or challenges that you can share?
Basically, no, because like what we do with car design, I think is very global, very understandable in a global market. And we wanted to suit to the same with the brand and the brand development. The only thing, of course, you see that there are differences in perception in the different regions. Like if we work on a TV commercial, the way you do it in America or in Japan or in Europe is different, but you can use the same brand values. You might have different kind of music or different kind of rhythm, but the overall message should be the same.
What you just described is so many new input into your day-to-day life. I mean, you know, agencies, marketing, a lot of these things are, or like, you know, a lot of these people are people that the usual just sketchy car designer doesn't want to hang out with. So how was that for you going into that kind of role, understanding from their perspective as well what they want, and then, you know, push them from your creative perspective, from, you know, the creation of the car, then going into marketing, representation, and so on?
Well, I mean, in the beginning, they thought that, if we talk about marketing, they thought that we're going to take over marketing, which is, you know, not the case, not at all. And it took me years to slowly build up confidence, because in the beginning, we were the car designers that want to do marketing. Which wasn't the case. But so slowly through projects with marketing and agencies, we slowly built up confidence. And we even got to a point where when we're doing a marketing campaign, the brand style team in near Frankfurt is completely involved from the beginning to the end, from the first campaign concepts until the actual shoot and the post-production. So we really had to grow the confidence within the company and making them understand that we don't want to take over. We just want to guide and improve and make sure that the way we portray the brand is, for instance, also in line with how we design cars, so that the whole package is harmonious.
How do you communicate that to people that are not car designers, people that usually work very logically, based on statistics, based on trend research, and so on and so on? And you, from a creative perspective, is oftentimes, I don't want to say chaotic because that's the wrong word, but it's not as regulated. And how did you adapt, and how did they adapt to that entire process?
It was also not so easy, but I mean, can you repeat the question? I forgot.
Yeah. So, what you just described as you know, working with marketing, gaining their trust, being very early in these projects, like, you know, literally from the first day onwards. How do you as a person, you know, just understand their process, you know, get to know their process, but also show, look, this is how we do things. This is how car design works. And maybe it helps if we put our processes together and both learn from them, because especially marketing people, like non-design people, they're oftentimes very structured. They're oftentimes, you know, working based on stats. Car design oftentimes is not like that. It's maybe to do with milestones, but it's not as regulated. So how do you, in your communications perspective from design to marketing to other departments, agencies as well, you know, explain to them this process that's happening that you want to run and that you think is the best and the most creative one is also profitable for them or something that they can learn from?
I mean, first of all, in the beginning, we were, let's say, watching and learning their processes. What was difficult for me was, you know, at Mazda, we don't do clinics for car design anymore since 10 years, and it seems to work. So, you know, we have the feeling we're doing the right thing. Whereas in marketing for campaigns, they still do a lot of research, and that kind of upset me a bit, or it was really hard to understand. But, you know, being completely involved in the process, you start to understand how they work, and then slowly you can introduce, let's call them design processes, to push for my intentions, like, you know, portraying the car in a better way, or, you know, making sure that they portray the brand as we want it as designers. And so, you know, it's a really long process, and we are at the point where we are talking about changing processes, and it's not just because of us, but because also the circumstances of, you know, having to work more efficient with less budget, with less time, and I think there, the fact that we are the creatives of the company, we can have a lot of influence on process.
It's interesting that you just mentioned the idea of, you know, lower budgets, like, you know, have to be more efficient. In the time where you were working as, you know, brand strategy, and now moved into the director position for the entire studio, have you seen that your colleagues have started thinking differently about it as well, about, you know, transportation design as a whole? Do they, when they have more to do with the brand itself, do they understand also that their work has maybe a different purpose? It's not just another car, but it's something that is bigger than just a product.
In my team, we still have, let's say, the car designers and the brand style people. But what I want to do is meld them together, and we're basically doing that already, because we do have a lot of discussions about the brand. You know, if you talk about what you want to reach with car design, you automatically talk about what you want to achieve with the brand, how you want people to perceive the brand and your cars. So I think it's almost a natural thing that's happening at the moment. You know, having the people from color and material, interior, exterior, and brand style slowly kind of melting together, and always delivering kind of one message, be it with materials, be it with an exterior design, or being with an advert.
Does this mean we slowly will get into a multi-usage designer? So somebody who's doing, you know, brand design, exterior, interior, color and trim. Of course, you will have these guys that are, you know, very specialized and then have a massive talent that will be working on one area. But is the future people that you can use for exterior, interior and brand? Or do you still think that the specialists will be in, you know, in a bigger group of people, more what the future will look like in terms of a design department?
Yeah, the way I'm trying to set up my studio is exactly this. You know, we do have specialists, but because the reason is also because we're relatively small, only 20 people, we have to be able to do everything, but everybody has their own speciality. And if you bring everybody together as a group, that's when the magic happens when you know that everybody understands each other, knows a bit about brand, knows a bit about exterior, and knows a bit about interior, but has, you know, a key speciality. If you put that all together, it's fantastic. You know, and I prefer that than having, you know, super specialists and within a small team, little departments that don't communicate with each other. That to me doesn't work. Might be because of my background or studying as a product designer. You always have to have, you know, knowledge about what other people are doing within the process. So, yeah.
So let me give you this little thought exercise. If I were to tell you now, okay, so you have to build the team from scratch. Yeah, like let's say you just come to Mazda, all the experience that you've had, and you build the team from scratch. How would you build that? Would you, from your perspective, say, oh, I need a few really good sketchers. I need some good people. I need people that can build cars as well. Or would you actually come in more from the product industrial design perspective and say, like, I need all rounders first and foremost, and the specialists are really just the cherry on top of the cake?
I would go for people with different backgrounds. You know, not focus on getting pure car designers, but maybe even have people that come from an engineering background but turned into car designers, or people from a graphics background. I think what enriches my studio is that most of the people are, let's call them, not the pure car designers. You know, they've done other stuff or they studied other things that, you know, benefit. You know, they might not all be the best sketchers in the world, but car design is not just about sketching, it's about being able to develop a product. And therefore, I think you need people, a good mixture of people with different backgrounds to enrich each other, basically.
Yeah, I agree. And combining that, I mean, this is really what design is all about. Yeah, it's not just about styling. We're talking about design as a whole, and it needs to be functional, and it needs to be feasible, it needs to be producible. And obviously the same goes in the end for brand design in that sense as well. What is interesting in your situation, you're obviously based in Oberursel, which is close to Frankfurt, and you're working for a Japanese company, but your main base is in Germany. So does that help you if, you know, your bosses from Japan come up to you and say, I want you to, you know, work something out for the brand and, you know, build something on this? Of course, there's a collaboration between you, the Japanese studio, and I would also assume the North America studio. But is it actually easier for you to develop something for the brand because you're not in Japan, that you have a certain kind of distance? Or is that sometimes a little bit tricky so that the guys in Japan say, oh, you know, here comes the European guy, doesn't understand Japanese culture?
I think we don't necessarily want to portray our brand as a pure Japanese brand, more like a global brand with Japanese roots. And I think what the Japanese really appreciate is the way in Europe brands have, and especially premium brands, have been building up over the years. And I think they really want to learn from that. In the past, very often Japanese brands would... For Europeans, they would be relatively difficult to understand because they tend to change maybe not their focus, but the way they visualize their brand. Or sometimes it would be too overpowering. So I think what the team in Japan does is really try to learn from the European way of building up brands. So it, for me, it's good to be here. And you know, to live in Europe and to be a European sponge that then, you know, brings all that experience to Japan.
Yeah. And obviously, I mean, in terms of branding itself and like the connection of the cultures, and when I was in Japan for the first time, I was almost blown away by, you know, the technology being available, like how advanced it is and stuff like that. From your perspective now, from a branding perspective, isn't that... How does this affect you? Are you going away and understanding the brand, you know, based on products? Do you look into a more digital world nowadays? Do you think that, you know, what happens on a screen, maybe in a car, is in the future more brand relevant than the car itself? Or how do you personally position yourself in this current transition that we have going on?
I mean, we do understand that whatever you do within the car, be it graphics or interface, but also the fact that more and more people will see and experience your brand only digital is slowly changing everything. You know, we are looking more at digital first campaigns. We just launched, in a sense, a digital show car, which is the PlayStation. Is it PlayStation?
Yeah, the Gran Turismo. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and everybody has seen it, but not in real. So that works as well. So we're slowly kind of moving in, or thinking at least in ideas of, you know, how can you reach people in a less physical way and just a digital way? Because to be honest, a lot of people see cars or concepts only on the internet. Of course, the real car is always better, but I think the reach is so much more digital these days that we really have to rethink.
Let me take that thought a little bit further, because you've probably seen this as well. There's serious threat to the Geneva Motor Show 2021 at this moment in time. It's very, you know, it's just not sure that it will go ahead. And there's this conversation going on of a lot of companies just like, oh, you know, we do our own events. We do, I think BMW did an online only reveal of a car. Mercedes did something similar. Now, you come very much from the physical world with the cars, and we've just talked about, you know, moving towards a digital world. What is your opinion on that? Do you think that not having car shows is going to be a challenge in the future? Do you think maybe the money can be spent in a better way, for example, on projects such as the Gran Turismo car? Or what kind of impact is it going to have on the brand if there's no physical presence, or like very little physical presence in terms of car shows potentially in the future?
I think car shows have this strong attention-grabbing effect, but I think they're probably more there for customers. When I don't talk about the Geneva Motor Show, I think it's a bit of an exception. When I think, for instance, of a Brussels Motor Show, the Brussels Motor Show is there for the customers, basically, because they have a lot of choice. They can walk around, see the real cars, discuss price between different brands. So there I see a strong need for motor shows. But otherwise, to present a car, you know, if you do it in your own environment, you can, let's call it, control the brand and the environment much better. You're less restricted to the, let's call them, regulations of a motor show. But you can do something a bit more special.
What's the solution to that? Do you think, in terms of a brand recognition, maybe something like CES is more interesting, is where you're mixing more with other technologies and other brands that are maybe in the mobility sector, but could also be in a non-mobility sector? Or is it really the future just to say, like, you know, we build ourselves our own little booth or presentation space in the future and then invite the people to have exclusive access to this?
I guess it's a mixer. I think for me, Goodwood is always a good example, you know, of because it's an experience. It's somewhere you go as a car nut, you go there and look at, you know, so many different aspects of car and car design. But you can go there with the whole family, you can picnic, it's a complete experience. And to be honest, to go to a motor show, especially on public days, I don't see it as a nice experience. It can be really stressful, you know. There's lots of people. You hardly see the cars, so I see, for me personally, more future in a more controlled environment where you can really present cars in a more beautiful way.
Yeah, Goodwood is a great example. I mean, it's combined with also the experience of driving. And I remember, was it last year or like 2 years ago, when they had the RoboRace car driving up Goodwood Hill as well, and kind of combined this new technology, you know, autonomous driving with, you know, I think, like, I don't know, like, you know, a DB4 GT Zagato, you know, going up straight after. So it's like the new world and the old world coming together. And it's almost more like a Disneyland in that regard. You know, you can have different things here, different experiences there, but it's still something where the whole family can go to. And I do agree on the motor shows. I think it's become a little bit too stale, especially on public days. I mean, we've always been fortunate enough to go on press days and really sit in the cars and have a very close look at it. But when you go on a public day, there's very little touch point towards that. And then if you take a picture and you look at it after, well, then you can do it online.
But also, you, as you said, in Goodwood, the cars move, you know, and that's something you don't have on a motor show. And it's also, I mean, I think slowly other industries are also developing new ways of getting to their customers. For instance, when I bought my electric bike, I found one from Belgium. Of course, there's no shops in Germany. So what they do is they give you the contact of a person that already has a bike, and that person comes, shows the bike. You talk to the guy, you can ride the bike, and you're not talking to a salesperson. You're talking to a person who already had the experience with it, and you don't have dealerships. You didn't have a motor show. It's just a completely different way of reaching customers and selling product, which I thought was very interesting.
It's interesting that you say this. Where do you keep or where do you get your inspiration on? We're not talking about like, you know, the exterior, interior of a car now, but like in terms of brand strategy, in terms of brand experience, brand interaction, where do you take your inspiration from? Is it from experience that you just described with the bike company? Is it by, you know, looking into completely different industries and see what they're doing? Or where does it come from?
Well, if you purely talk about the way Mazda wants to portray itself as a brand, we look very much at our history and the fact that we do come from Japan without shouting, you know, we're from Japan. But we go very deep in the Japanese philosophy or craftsmanship or even language and try to get really interesting, beautiful elements out of this. So we tend to look more inwards than outwards when it's purely about the brand. When it comes about evolving into a digital world, we do have to look at the outside world, because to be honest, we don't have so much experience with it. And as you know, the car industry is a bit slower than you know, a bike company that just started. You know, it's a bit more complicated than selling a couple of bikes. So.
What's a good example for you at the moment of a company that really inspires you, especially on the digital space? You know, something where you're really impressed and where you would say, I would love to have that in the car industry, and not just, you know, within Mazda, but in general.
Well, I mean, just to mention, the bike that I bought is called Carboy, and they're from Belgium. I think the way they presented themselves in a super simple way. Also, they only have one product, so you don't have to make a choice. It's just one product, and the product is really simple. You know, there's no gears, so it's the whole thing is so super pure, and also the way they interact with the customers, it's just a bit more modern than having to go to a car dealership when you buy a car. That's for me a really good example. Of course, there's a couple of examples in the car industry as well, which I won't mention. I think there's more, let's say, young startup companies that give the examples of how we can develop also more in a digital in a digital way.
If we think a little bit further, and I want to challenge you a little bit on this one. Of course, we live in an environment nowadays where the idea of a brand is becoming increasingly important, especially when it comes to mobility. I'm thinking about Uber, I'm thinking about Lyft, I'm thinking about mobility services in general. How do you think will the car industry have to adapt to that also in terms of branding, so that, let's say, you know, a Mazda could also, you know, offer a, you know, like a, you know, mobility service like an Uber or something like that, so that it's not just becoming a provider of the hardware in that sense. To, you know, give a little bit of an example, of course, the, you know, the canoe system that was revealed, you know, some time ago, is based on exactly that kind of thought. It's like, we give you the hardware and then, you know, do whatever you want with it, pretty much. I know, after speaking with a lot of executives in the car industry, there are some companies that want to push for that, and some other companies just like, no, I'm okay with being, you know, just a hardware. What do you think? And this doesn't necessarily need to be in Mazda terms, of course, but what do you think the car industry needs to do to not lose that kind of competition at the moment against companies that are, you know, not hardware producers?
Well, I think, you know, the car at the moment still is probably the second most expensive product that you buy in your life. And during this corona crisis, having my car outside for 8 weeks not being used, you know, I really questioned it sometimes. Like, you know, this is a, I don't know, 40,000-50,000 euro car or product, and I'm hardly using it. So I think we have to find new ways where people can use our product, being cars, in a more efficient way. I think there's more and more, especially young people, will tend not to buy, but rather lease and have somebody take care of all the problems, just like they do with the phones. So I think as a car company, you slowly have to think that way. You know, you're not going to sell your product anymore, but you might rent it out, or, you know, and give the service on top, or give the people also the chance to maybe drive different cars from your range and not just have to fix, you know, that the choice on one specific model. So I think in that way, for us, the market will slowly change.
Will it also change in how you do your work? I mean, like, in your position, if, let's say, this would happen and, you know, you will have to adapt, would you say your designers, like, okay, we need to be thinking in a completely different way nowadays? It's not just about beautiful surfacing, it's about pragmatism in that sense, almost a little bit, you know, let's follow what Dieter Rams has, you know, has given us in that kind of sense. And the whole design will be a bit more pragmatic, and it will be laid out for a completely different environment. We will see a shift that materials are becoming more important with, you know, this virus situation at the moment. Of course, almost medical surfaces become important, so that they, you know, that they don't carry any, you know, any illnesses and stuff. How do you think the design job will change through that kind of mindset? Like, and also, you know, how much impact will it have on the actual brand? Is the product going to be as important in the future as it is right now?
It can go two ways. I mean, it could be, as you said, that people will think really pragmatic about a car. But it could also go a completely different way, where they think, okay, maybe I do more home office and therefore I use my car less. But when I use my car, I can enjoy it more. So I maybe buy a car that's maybe less pragmatic but more fun. So I think it can go two ways. I hope it's not going the completely pragmatic way without emotions and just, you know, a product that only shows fear, or, you know, it to me, a car should still be a product that you know, you want to use and not have to use. So I hope it goes more in the direction that people think, if I have to use a car, I want to use a car.
No, I agree. And I want to move into something that I personally found extremely exciting. And, you know, we as a company, we've done a creative challenge on it some time ago. I want to talk quickly about K-Cars as well, because for me, in terms of a branding situation, when I was in Japan, the K-Cars were almost the most exciting ones there, because it's something that for us as a European person, not being used to them, is fairly exciting, because they're so compact, they have certain kind of regulations. Now, as the cities are getting bigger and bigger, and I mean, you know this from Frankfurt, you know, like, it's very international, it's a big city, there's a lot of people there. We look at Berlin, we look at London, Paris, you know, you name it. Do you think that K-Cars could also become a brand statement for sustainability, for, you know, new mobility, like all these, you know, maybe also autonomy and all in that kind of context for the European mega cities or large cities, because that's something that I've never quite understood, is that these small cars, apart from the smart, have really managed to go into the cities. And in Japan, it's almost on a day-to-day level, obviously considering that there's space issues and, you know, there's tax incentives of driving these cars. But it almost seems logical that at some point, and also from a positioning of a brand, the K cars should come over to Europe.
Yeah, and I mean, I lived in Japan as well, and my wife had a K car, and it was so much fun. And you're right. I mean, this, it almost looks like most of the creativity in Japan is put into the K cars. And that's probably because of the limitations of size, so that they have to all work with the same rules, but they all try to make something extremely funny out of it. And I loved driving it, although it wasn't the best car to drive, but I had a bench seat in the front, and the gears were on the steering column. So yeah, I'm always surprised that these cars don't get to Europe, because I also think they would fit perfectly. They could also, I think in Japan, you could really find a K car that fits your personality. You know, there's so many characters of K cars. But I think it's just an economical thing, you know, because small cars have to abide to the same rules as big cars, so all the safety systems become really expensive. But apart from that, I think, to me, K cars should be in Europe as well. They're just fun and cool and small, yeah. And I guess more than enough for most people, in, you know, as a car.
And this is always what I was thinking, you know, with the Smart, which was, I would say, like the only European K car in that kind of context, for most people was enough. I mean, you know, they had these presentations, you can put a crate of water or beer or whatever in it, you can do your weekly shopping and everything. But I still find it strange that there was never really an attempt. I think Daihatsu was a company that tried to bring these smaller-ish cars to Germany quite a bit, but it always seemed a little bit, for me, either they were too afraid of mixing their branding in, yeah, so just to say like, oh, maybe we should do a sub-brand or something like that, or they were too afraid that the Europeans, and obviously the Americans is a different story, but let's put it on the Europeans, were just a little bit too afraid of it. I think, you know, an engineering solution could have been found, maybe even with, you know, these, in France, they have these Aixam cars, which are limited to a certain amount of speed, I think, which for the city is perfectly fine as well. But it seemed more of a marketing decision not to do it rather than, let's say, an engineering decision. I'm not quite sure what your experience is with that, but I'm pretty sure if you would ask any designer here in Europe to design a K car, they would jump in the air and be the happiest person in the world.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a good exercise to do something personal in very limited space. But again, I think if we move to a space where people want to have more positive cars, and a K car to me would be, you know, a very good example. But yeah, I mean, K cars for me, I'm looking at a K car at the moment. Actually, I've got a small scale model of a K car in my studio, and yeah, I've got really good memories about it. And we discussed it within Mazda. We don't have our own K cars. We have rebadged, I think, Suzuki's. And it was always explained to me as an economical thing that we can't do it in Europe. But yeah, it's a shame, because that's the kind of fun car that we need at the moment, I think. And also, but it's again, you know, people not all buying smarts is this fear of having to buy that one car that can do everything. Whereas if we move into a world where maybe you can have different cars at different moments when you need them, then hopefully people will also think of more fun cars when they have to drive or when they want to drive.
Talking about fun cars, let's talk quickly about the MX-5, because that's probably one of the most fun cars to drive on a on a budget. I've had great experiences with that car. I had one in California driving up Highway 1. The fantastic experience, roof down. It was a manual one as well, which was fantastic. Now, how do you, and not from a purely exterior perspective on this, but from when you think about the branding perspective, when you think about the brand Mazda as a whole, and then, you know, the fellowship that the brand has because of the MX-5, how do you, you know, go on, you know, the very early phase where you define that kind of car? Like, you know, what are you looking at? Are you just looking into customers that you've used before, or like that bought the car before, what the car was, as you explained before, with the heritage? Or are you also looking into, like, you know, we as a brand, like, how, what do we want to stand for? I mean, this is, you know, a very young car. It's also absolutely beloved by women, which I think is an outstanding fact for this whole thing. So if I were to go to you and say, like, we do a new MX-5, but let's define it from a branding perspective, what are the challenges that you come up with fun cars like that, but also these big sellers?
Well, the big fun part of the MX-5, as you said, is the driving. So if we design an MX-5, it's all about the driving. And the way we've done it, of course, on the outside, you can see it's very dynamic and it looks very sporty. It looks beautiful. You can see it moves. It can move fast and it can take you through the corner, with lots of fun. But also on the interior, the way we've done it is like connecting the door panel with the front fender. You know, we didn't really look at a certain customer. We just thought of, you know, what is the biggest fun experience you can have with this car. That even meant thinking of weight and reducing design weight as well, but also physical weight, working with smaller engines, working with a smaller package, and really, you know, concentrating on the driving. And that, I think, especially for the MX-5, is basically the brand of the MX-5. If you look at what Mazda is doing in general, every car that we do has a bit of MX-5 in it. You know, we again on the interior, we focus on the driver, we focus on the driving, we focus on the fact that you can actually feel that you're in control. And in design, we do that by putting all the elements in the right position. And on the exterior, I find we've always been honest by designing an exterior that gives you our customer a certain promise, but we're also sure that we can deliver on that promise. It's a beautiful car, it looks like it's fun to drive, and it actually is. And that's, I think, if you really look at the core of the brand, that's probably it. The way we interpret that into Cordo design is then the design philosophy which hangs on this brand.
Yeah. And that's the feeling that I get from it. You know, it's still a very drivable direction in terms of design as well. I mean, it's, you know, if you take other companies for an example that are very screen based, that want to take almost like the wheel away from you, it seems that you know, Mazda says, no, we want you to drive. We want you to enjoy this kind of feeling rather than, oh, you know, here's 100 million things to do. It's a little bit of less is more.
Yeah, and I think it's about focus. You know, we don't want to, when you talk about screens, we want you to focus on the driving. So we're not going to overload you with information and screens. But also when you look at the design, especially exterior design, we keep it really pure. And if you do that, then people will start focusing on the details maybe a bit more then. And it all hangs together. Our idea of, as you said, less is more, but in a very emotional way, has been a very interesting process for us as well. You know, getting away from overloading a car with information or design elements was not so easy for us. You know, knowing when to stop is much more difficult than overloading a car with elements.
Yeah. And how was this decision made? I mean, if we go back to this idea of a grander strategy, I mean, this is not a decision that you make, for one car. I mean, usually this is a decision where you say, like, look, we go that far. That's what we want to have in. But, the rest is maybe for higher levels or something like that. But the general kind of car should still be appealing, and it should be still a driver's car. How big was the argument internally to get to that point?
I think it wasn't so much argument. It was really a looking for almost the impossible. You know, telling ourselves, like when the RX Vision came out, the idea behind that was doing something that doesn't exist yet. Which, when we got that message from our chief designer in Japan, Maeda-san, we were thinking, but everything's been done before. And, you know, having that goal of trying to do something that's never been done before really pushed us in a direction where we, at first, were very uncomfortable. But then slowly, you know, through the whole process and the clay and the painting of the car, we suddenly realized, wow, we did achieve something that hasn't been done before. And yeah, that's then incredible when you get then the reactions from the people as well. It's just incredible. It's a constant process, and it's something that we're almost doing on a daily basis. It's really tough because in a sense we're always questioning ourselves.
Yeah. Last but not least, before we get to the three questions everybody gets. How physical are you still working? I mean, there's obviously videos around that Mazda is still a very, you know, very heavy on clay and, you know, likes to explore with clay as well. Where do you see moving everything, you know, move towards, especially with budget cuts on departments and stuff like that? Will you continue to use as much clay as you maybe do still now, or will it be more digital in the future?
Well, I mean, yes, we're still doing a lot of clay. But we do see a change. We are experimenting in digital to see, you know, can we translate the clay into digital? Until now, it's been rather difficult, and we thought not really to our satisfaction. But I think with the corona has been kind of been catapulting us into the future. The fact that, if you work on clay, you have to stand close to each other. Designer and modeler stand close to each other. There's too much physical contact. So we have to find different ways of working. But for us still, clay at the moment is a very tactile thing. And I think what we've been designing in the last 10 years is a result of being very tactile. We've seen digital modelers who've been able to recreate what we do, but it's a slow process.
What's the biggest challenge of it to not move, let's say, into a digital led process? What's the biggest challenge for you?
I guess it's to me what disturbs me very often with digital. It's in a computer. It's not visible for most of the times. You know, and to me, design is about communicating. And if you have a lump of clay in the middle of a room, it's kind of easier to talk about it than, you know, when you have to open a file, which is in a locked computer, which, you know, can only be handled by certain people. It's different. So if we find ways that we can communicate and discuss about design in the same way as when we do when we talk about a physical thing, then maybe there's a chance. But when it comes down to the end, when you develop materials, of course, that to me is purely digital. Because in the end, you know, coming back to motor shows, what happens on motor shows, people open the door, sit in the car and start touching everything. So, you know, that's something that digitally is difficult to copy.
Indeed, indeed. Thank you very much for taking the time. But before I let you go, as promised, three questions. two of them are very design generic. To put it that way. So you don't have to answer them in a purely car perspective. You can, of course, if you would like to. The third one is very much car-based. Yeah. So I'll pre-warn you about this already. Now, question number one, which project that you have not worked on you would have been absolutely loved to be a part of?
Wow. You just talked design in general, no?
Anything you want.
Yeah. I think I'm going to change the question a bit. I think I'm going to change the question to in which design studio would you have liked to be, when a certain product was developed? Because to me, it's more the people than product. So as you might know, I'm a big Dieter Rams fan. So if I could have been in his studio working with him, that would have been amazing. Any of the product he designed, it's still amazing. Yeah,
fantastic. Number two, which designer that you have or have not worked with has inspired you the most in your career?
Again, you cannot pinpoint it to one. I mean, Dieter Rams is one, but it also depends on the stage in my life. I remember when I started product design, it was Philip Stark because he brought a bit of kind of fun into products, where Dieter Rams is very mathematical. Philip Stark was a bit more fun and was exploring a bit more in form and materials. That would be Steve Jobs and what's his name?
Johnny Ive.
Exactly. Yeah. Related to what Dieter Rams has done, but the way they developed, not necessarily design, but products, completely rethink of how you build a laptop and how you produce it, going really, making big steps, which at the moment, sadly, is missing.
All right. Number three, this is the car question. If I give you a blank check, what car would you buy?
I've never been a supercar fan, so I wouldn't buy a Ferrari or a Lamborghini. I think I'd buy a collection of cars, not just one car. Because, again, for every moment, I wanted to have a different car.
Yeah,
I have a small car collection already. So, but, I mean, on my list is still a Mazda Cosmo or a 2000 GT Toyota or... that kind of cars that are just way too expensive. Yeah, so that would be on my list, I guess. And I tend to buy also cars that make people smile when you drive them, like an MX-5 or I've got an old bus and it just, the reactions you get from the people is mainly positive.
Yeah.
And that's what I like.
Lovely.
So. You can send the check.
I'll need to work a little bit more before I can do that.
Okay. But
that's fine. Thank you very much. I do really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day, of course. To all of our listeners, I hope you enjoy the conversation with you. And of course, we will include you into the show notes so that people can find you on LinkedIn, can also get in contact with you if they, want to chat with you. And beyond that, to all of our listeners, please, as always, if you like this episode, give us 5 stars on iTunes, on, Spotify, wherever you're listening to us, helps us to get a bit more traction in the entire scene. And of course, you will hear back from us in about a couple of weeks' time with the next episode of the Gestalten Podcast. Until then, goodbye.